Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/auto discounts. Restrictions apply.
All right, everybody, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. If this is the first time that you've ever listened to this episode, welcome. This episode will not be about deer hunting. It's going to be weird. All right. For those of you who have listened to a lot of the Nine Finger Chronicles in the past, welcome back. And this episode is going to be a story. It's not going to be deer hunting related. As a lot of you guys know, sometimes I go off the deep end and I share stuff that's not outdoor related, hunting related, but life related. And I had a life moment that I would say was 2 weeks ago, right? It was actually not last Friday, but the Friday before. And maybe, God, I can't even remember. Time seems to move differently when there is a major event. Sometimes good, you know, they say time flies when you're having fun, but also time flies when you're scared shitless as well. And sometimes it can move extremely slow in high pressure situations, and other times, like, I can't believe how much time has passed since this event that I'm going to talk about today. And I was really debating on whether or not I should share the story, because at the end of the day, it's just like, it's just another story of another random person in this world. And we tend to get those stories a lot, whether they're coming on social media, whether they're coming in podcasts or on the news or something like that. But I wanted to share this story because it gave me a little bit of perspective about life and about what is important and about time that we have on this planet, and about, man, I like I know you guys, some of you guys might be sick of hearing me say this, but about faith and about prayer and about family and about my children and about my wife and about who comes through for you when you need it the absolute most, right? And those are the people that may lay dormant at times, or you may not focus on at times. And when you really need them, they show up in a big way for you. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you guys about today is this event. But I do want to send a huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I know it's weird. I'm not going to be talking about hunting at all in this episode, but I do want to talk about these fine partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. And I hope you guys can understand why I do this, because it pays the bills, right? So if you're looking for, in my opinion, one of the best broadheads on the market, and a broadhead that I have been using for what seems to be my entire bow hunting career, that is Wasp Archery. Go check out wasparchery.com for their full lineup of mechanical and fixed blade heads. Most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States, which is a big, big thing. So go check out wasparchery.com. And I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. Turkey season is just around the corner. And if you are looking for maybe a red dot for your shotgun, or to put a red dot on your kid's 410 to get them out and make maybe putting the red dot on the turkey's head a little bit more fun and effective, and not have to worry so much about lining up iron sights, go check out Vortex Optics full line of red dots for your turkey gun. Take advantage of their VIP warranty. You bust it, you break it, a bear crushes it, and you have to turn it in, they'll take care of it. They'll take care of it for you. They'll replace it or fix it for free and send it back to you. So vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Code Blue Sense. Code Blue offers a complete lineup of real and synthetic deer lures. They offer scent elimination products like body washes, laundry detergents, field sprays. My favorite is the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. And one thing I was talking to my oldest son about yesterday, as a matter of fact, he's like, "Dad, when are we going to go shed hunting?" And I'm told him, "All right, it's going to be probably in a couple weeks here." He's like, "Okay, cool. Can we put a mock scrape out?" Cause he's heard me talk about mock scrapes, and he's set a couple up with me, in the past, and we put the cameras over top of it, so he gets to see the pictures, from the reveal cell cams, of the deer hitting the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. And so he's all jacked about, getting all that set up again for this upcoming year. So go check out codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. These guys are doing it like LL Cool J would say. They're doing it well. And, I don't know why I said that, why I referenced LL Cool J there. Anyway, Reveal has the brand new Ultra. All right. So this past year, they introduced the Ultra. It's a badass cell cam. They still have some 3.0 versions available that you guys can go purchase. But the new Ultra is here. It's a badass camera, and they've done some updates to their app. They have the mapping functionality there. They have the weather on there. So really it's a one-stop shop for mapping your properties, putting your cell cams out, organizing your photos, all of that stuff. Go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new Ultra. Last but not least, my company, fullsneakgear.com. If you want to buy a t-shirt with a deer or a turkey on it, especially now that we have turkey season coming up, with some funny sayings or some just unique, different hunting vibe t-shirts, go check out fullsneakgear.com. All right, I'm going to take a sip of water here. And I want to make sure the dates are right on this. So I'm going to pull up the calendar. Okay. Yeah. So it would have been. Yeah. Okay. So this the story starts really with me, my wife, and my kids. Every the last couple of years, we've gone to this wrestling tournament. It's 2 hours away. It's in Des Moines, and we go there with another couple. We stay in an Airbnb. It's an all girls wrestling tournament. The family that I go with has all four girls. They're also our neighbors, so they're like second family to us. And we go hang out at an Airbnb. Then we go to the wrestling tournament. This year, we left a day early because it matched up with our high school girls wrestling team going out and going to districts to see who gets to make it to state. So we went there and we started, we watched some wrestling, and then we were going to go to the Airbnb. Well, Friday on the way for Friday, my wife started not feeling very well. It kind of started in her nose and in her sinuses. My wife does have asthma, and it's something that she had struggled with in the past. She uses a lot of her rescue inhaler. She's on prednisone a lot. She's on prednisone. Sometimes that leads to like pneumonia, where she's going to need an antibiotic to fix that. And it's not necessarily out of the ordinary, especially in the winter months, to all of a sudden go to urgent care, get a shot of steroids, take a breathing treatment, and then come back and be fine in a couple, you know, in like a handful of hours, 4 hours or something like that, and she's fine. And so we're used to it. It's just something we're used to in our family, is, or, and she's used to, and I'm used to. And sometimes when you are used to something and something worse happens, you don't necessarily know what, like how bad something is, because you are assuming it's like the boy who cried wolf, right? He cries wolf all the time. And then all of a sudden an actual wolf shows up and nobody pays attention to it. And there was a little bit of that kind of going on too. So Friday we go, and after the wrestling meet, my wife, she just starts to look and feel horrible. She's like, please stop at Walgreens on the way to the Airbnb after this wrestling tournament that we went to for the varsity girls. I'm going to grab some stuff and then we're going to go home. And I want to get some sleep. I'm like, yeah, cool. Absolutely. So we stop at Walgreens. She picks up a whole bunch of meds. Mostly sinus. We always keep a nebulizer with us. She always has an inhaler with us and things like that. And we get to the Airbnb and, she's not feeling good. She's kind of tired, and she goes to sleep. She tries to sleep and she just can't catch her breath. And she's just breathing heavy. And we're just like, do another treatment. You know, do your inhaler, take another nebulizer treatment. And, long story short, it just wasn't helping. Okay. And so she went to bed. Everybody else went to bed. And at like 2:30 in the morning, she wakes me up because there's two bedrooms upstairs that myself and like she was in a bed with one of the boys. I was in a bed with another boys. My daughter was downstairs in a different room with the neighbor girls. And so my wife wakes me up. She's like, I'm just not getting past this asthma attack. And this is where I got used to her not feeling a certain way. And maybe she didn't explain to me how bad she was actually feeling. And I said, you know, she's like, I think I need to go to the ER. And I'm like, yeah, go to the ER, right? Go to the ER, because we've done this before. We go to the urgent cares, go to the urgent care, get your medicine, get your breathing treatment, your steroids. And she's back feeling a little better, you know, in a handful of hours. So I'm like, yeah, just drive to the ER, get what you need, and then come back. Well, she's like, I want you to come with me. And I was like, are you sure you want me to come with me? Because the last thing I want in a scenario like this is for both of us to be extremely tired and then have to deal with the kids. We've been there before. It does not turn out well. And again, we just weren't feeling like how bad the scenario was about to be. And so we got in the car, I took her to the ER, and we got right in, and the doctors were, you know, checking her blood oxygen, which was low, checking her heart rate, which was high. And they gave her some steroids and they gave her a breathing treatment. And I'm like, hey, listen, usually this takes like a couple hours. I'm going to leave and I'll come back and get you when you need me. She's like, okay, that's fine. So I go back to the Airbnb. I hop in bed for a handful of hours. I wake up the next morning and I got a couple texts from her throughout the night, and she calls or she texts me and says, you know, they're going to put me in a room. And I'm like, okay, which doesn't seem to be out of the ordinary. And she calls me or she texts me and I said, let me finish cooking breakfast, because I was in the middle of making pancakes for everybody at the house. And I said, okay, this is like 7 o'clock in the morning, so it's been 5 hours. I felt like I was going to go there. They were going to release her and they were going to pick her at, you know, and we were going to go home. So I finished cooking. I went and grabbed, a coffee for her, and on my way there, and I was like, I'm just going to pick her up, give her a coffee, and we're going to be good to go. Well, I drive there and I walk into, I say, hey, where's Sarah Johnson? And the lady goes, well, she's in the intensive care unit. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, intensive care? How bad is this? Maybe they didn't have enough room, so they needed to put her there. I walk around the corner and there's seven doctors and nurses all working on her. And I'm just like, what the hell? Like, it took me by storm. Like, I looked at her. She was on a constant nebulizer, which means that the albuterol was going into her body constantly. And that's not a good sign. That means the lungs are not opening up. She was on pressurized oxygen, meaning the little tube just for some type of oxygen was not there. And they were forcing oxygen in her nose. They had this big machine hooked up to her, almost like a pressure, like when you turn on a pressurized air container to fill up your car tires. That's what she was hooked up to, something like that, blowing air into her nostrils, up into her lungs. And I get in there and her heart rate is like at 140, maybe at that time over. Her blood oxygen level was 77, and 91, 92 is considered extremely low. And hers was at 77. And so what had happened was her lungs were shutting down. And there's a term for it, acute asthmatic something. Her lungs were shutting down. The inflammation was so great in her lungs, it was starting to shut down. And so I was like, what the, I was just kind of almost in shock that, I left her in one condition and I came back in another and she was in a completely 180 condition. And so they were talking about moving her to another hospital because the stuff that they had at that hospital was not what she needed as far as machines are concerned. And they have better doctors over there. They're going to transfer hospitals. And then at that point, I'm like, I got to start asking questions to the doctor. So I step out into the hallway with the doctor and I'm asking her questions like, what's going on? And this is when she starts explaining all of this stuff. You know, she's using very big words. She's starting to say things like, you need to tell your wife to calm down because her anxiety and panic are actually making everything worse. We're going to give her some medicine to help calm her down, like a Valium or something. I don't know. There's a specific name for it. to calm her down, but she needs to calm down because everything she's doing is making it worse. And I'm like, this seems like a lot. And he goes, and she goes, this is very serious right now. And so I go, I want you to be extremely blunt with me so I can start preparing myself. I need to know. And so I can call parents because I have kids in town. I don't live here. I need to be prepared. And I said, where is she at right now? On a scale from 0 to 10, 0, we're going to be leaving this hospital in 45 minutes, 10 being the worst possible case scenario. And she goes, we're at a 6 and climbing right now. And I said, what are we going to do at the other hospital? And she goes, well, there is a very small chance, or not small. She's like, there's a very small pocket of air moving through your wife's lungs. She said, I cannot hear the breathing when I put a stethoscope to her chest. There's no sound there, and that's not good. And so when we get to the other hospital, she's going to probably be put into a medically induced coma, put on a ventilator that actually, because she's struggling. Like if you were to look at, watch her breathe, it was like these big, powerful, and that's when I started getting fucking scared, dude. So when she did that, and she did that for 2 straight days, she was like that. And she's like, she's going to have to be put on a ventilator. She's going to be put in a coma. She's going to be put on a ventilator, and there's going to be a machine that they go into her neck and another one in her inner thigh. And that blood is going to come out of the body. It's going to get oxygenated and then put back in her body because her lungs aren't working. Long story short, that's life support. And I'm just like, what? It just seemed like it all happened so fast. My wife was freaking out. I was freaking out. I'm playing all these crazy scenarios in my head. I'm trying to plan because I have the kids. I didn't know, like when someone tells me you're going to be put in a medical coma and then put on a ventilator, that's not good. And in reality, it's not good. Okay. And so we hop in the car and I'm calling my mom. I'm like, hey, you got to come to Des Moines. You got to pick up the boys. I was lying to my kids straight up. I lied to them all the entire process. I was like, yeah, mom's just at the hospital getting a breathalyzer. And I know this story kind of is going fast, but the period of time, we're talking hours, like a couple hours go by from the time that I get to the hospital and to the time she's transported to another hospital. Like, I want to say like 2 hours are going by, and they're just focused on her. They're assessing her. Things are getting worse and worse and worse, which dictated the transport. At one point they thought they were going to have to fly her in a helicopter to a different area. Eventually a place opened up in this ICU unit at a different hospital that had all of the stuff that she needed or that they said she needed. And so she gets in the ambulance to go transfer to another hospital. And I'm calling my mom and I'm just like, hey, listen, here's what's going on. Like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Like, this is serious. This is like worst case scenario possibility stuff we're talking about here. You know, we get to I call my mom, I call my dad. My dad's like, fuck it, I'm coming down. He got a hotel. He was going to get a hotel room and just be in town for whatever happened because he was planning on coming to my daughter's wrestling tournament the next day anyway. My mom came down, picked up the boys, took them back to her house. That was the plan anyway. And I started, to be completely honest with you, I started like getting emotional because I didn't know what the hell was going on. And I was watching. If you were going to say to somebody, what does a person look like who's about to die, who can't breathe and their lungs have stopped working? That's what I would have envisioned is what my wife looked like. Not like just like last breaths type of shit. And I got scared. And so I followed the ambulance. I followed the ambulance into the emergency. They went into this different area that I couldn't go into. I had to pull into the emergency room parking lot and in this new, a different hospital. And I needed something at that time. And so I called the preacher that I do my weekly Bible study with, who's honestly becoming like a friend of mine now, because we meet so often, and just a really, really cool guy. And he's like, "Hey man, what's up?" And you could hear my voice. I'm sure he could waver and whimper basically. And I'm just like, "Dude, I need something from you right now." And I told him what was happening. And I was absolutely scared shitless. And that's crazy for a man. If there was an attacker that came at my wife, I could jump in between them. I could fight them off. If there was a building that was getting ready to collapse or on fire, I could run in and grab her and try to pull her off. But when you have a scenario like this, and now I know what my dad felt like when he was going through cancer treatments with my stepmom. You can't do anything. I couldn't fight the problem. I couldn't make her better. And that is what probably frightened me the most. There's nothing that I could do to fix what was happening right there. And so I called that, my preacher buddy up, and I was like, "Dude, I need you right now. I need something right now." This is where it gets really weird for me. Because he said a prayer, a pretty powerful prayer. It felt powerful to me. He's like, what do you need? I'll come to you, whatever you need, I'll come to you. And I'm like, "Dude, just stand by right now. My mom is coming. My daughter's staying with the family friends, and we're in a place where, I don't know. Like, honestly, at that point, I almost blacked out because I didn't know what was happening, what was going on. The worst possible things were popping into my head. And now I had to try, after that prayer that I had with my preacher and that conversation, I had to be like, "Dude, I have to now call her parents and explain to them what's going on." And so I don't know if any of you guys have ever been in a scenario like this where maybe you didn't want to do something, but you knew you had to do it. And it was of the utmost importance, because I could have went in there crying and looking distraught, and went back into that ICU unit, and my wife could have seen me broken down, and my wife would have saw the look and the concern on my face, which would have scared her even more. Dude, I simply got out of the car. I looked as I'm trying to regain, because I lost it, regain composure. I looked up at the sky and I said, "God, I need strength right now." And I sucked in this big, deep breath. And I'm like, if someone saw me, they're like, "That guy's on fucking drugs," right? If they saw what I was doing, I took this big, deep breath. And as I blew it out, I made this like manly noise. I went, "Ah! Ah!" And I just like blew all my stress. And if it didn't come out, I swallowed it deep down inside. And I was just like to myself, I was like, "It's time to be a fucking man, dude. It is time to be a man right now." And so I got my composure back. I dialed my, my father-in-law, and I updated him on kind of what the hell was going on and the fact that she might have to be put on a ventilator. And I don't think he quite understood what was happening. And I tried to be, kind of tell him, and his response was like, oh, that sucks. Like when you, he's a big fisherman. So it's like, I've also heard this, him say the same things when he catches a big bass and then it gets off the hook before he can hook it off. He was like, ah, son of a bitch. Right. Like that's how he was reacting to his daughter having to be put on a ventilator. So I don't know if it was probably me not being fully transparent or detailed to them about it. And I was just like, they're like, should we come tonight? Or come? And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, that's up to you. And he's like, oh, we'll just come tomorrow. And at that point, I was just like kind of over it. And I just was like, I got to get back. I got to get up to her right now. Because I want to be there before she goes on. They put her under and goes on this machine. And so I walk into the ER and I say, my wife is being admitted into the intensive care unit in this hospital. They said they already have a room for her. Where is she at? They type on the computer and they're like, she's not in our system yet. So she hadn't been checked in. She hadn't been checked into the hospital. So I had to go wait. And you know, you want to talk about how time moves different. That 15 minutes that I was in that waiting room, waiting for her to get checked in, maybe it was a little less, maybe even 10 minutes. It felt like days and hours passing by. Like every second felt like a day. Cause again, I was feeling like, I just felt helpless. Like I couldn't do anything. I'm lying to my kids. Where's mom at? Oh, mom's in the hospital. She's just getting a breathing treatment and she'll be home here pretty soon. What actually was happening was her lungs were so inflamed, she was dying. And I couldn't say, an 8 and 10 year old, they don't understand that shit. My daughter, however, she turns 13 this month. She was slowly starting to catch on, but I was being as vague as humanly possible about what actually was kind of happening, what was actually happening with her. I just didn't want her to be, number one, she still thought she was going to wrestle. And she, and I didn't want, if she did decide to wrestle, I didn't want to be like, hey, listen, your mom is in a medically induced coma right now and she's not doing well, right? She's struggling breathing and all this, and that would worry her. And then she would go to this tournament with something else other than wrestling in her head. And I didn't want that to happen. So, I lied to all my kids. It's not a good feeling, dude. It doesn't feel good lying to their kids about their own mother. Finally, they say, Mr. Johnson, we got a room. ICU room 20. And I get up there. Again, there's all these people working on her, hooking her up to machines, getting all this stuff ready. And the doctor had already come in and evaluated her. And this is where I said it gets weird. In the moment that I left the hospital, I prayed, I got to the next hospital, and my wife could barely speak. She could barely speak. She had every word required a deep breath from her. She could not. And that's where the ventilator was going to come into play, because like, if you can't even talk, if you can't speak because you can't get enough oxygen, that's a very bad sign. And from the time that she got on that ambulance, got transferred up into that room, she was on the edge. And something happened in that time frame where there was a backward step off of that ledge and her body started to rebound, because for the first 12 hours, of getting medicine and treatment, the medicine was not working. It was not doing what it was supposed to do. The nebulizer, constant nebulizer in her body was not doing what it was supposed to do. And the worst possible thing that you can imagine, watching someone who is the love of my life deteriorate to a point in a very fast, like, I'm not sitting here saying what happened with her is this, it, you know, is comparable to anything else. Cause my wife, she made it out of this, alive. Thank God. But I can't imagine what my dad went through when he watched cancer just like slowly eat my stepmom away. That must have felt different and helpless in its own way. And I'm not trying to compare that to this, but it was really scary. And so I come to the, like, the first thing I do is I walk up to the doctor. I wave at my wife. She doesn't respond. Her eyes are open. She's sitting up, but she's not responding. And I pull the wife or pull the doctor down the hallway. I'm like, what? I need an update. What's going on? And she's like, the doctor saw her and she was talking. She talked to him. And when he was asking her questions, she was answering them. And being able to answer the question means that she is able, she doesn't need to be on this machine. Because those machines that you put, that people get put on, I don't know if you guys remember COVID. If you were like morbidly obese, if you had asthma, and it was mixed with something else, or you had a breathing problem, or you were allergic to certain things, like COVID was wiping those people out. And once you got put on a ventilator or those machines, you very rarely came out of those things. And that's what I knew. And that's what freaked out. So the doctor was like, I think we're going to hold off a little bit on this and see what happens. And that was a good sign for me anyway. I was like, holy shit. And at that moment when the doctor said that, I felt I've never talked about this shit out loud to anybody before, but I felt like a presence that was with me. It was the strangest, most unreal thing that I have ever felt. And I didn't feel calm or safe quite yet, but I had the feeling of everything's going to be okay. And I told my preacher this past week when we were doing this, we talked about it again when we got back home, and you know, things are fine now. But I told him, I was like, I felt like I had a hand on my back. And I used the reference, like, do you know when you were a kid and maybe it was one of your first at bats in a baseball game, you would get a little nervous before an at bat, and a coach would put his hand on your shoulder, on his back, and he would say something along the lines of like, you got this, buddy. Like, you can do this. You're good. You're good. It's all good, man. Relax. Go have fun. It was a version of that. Now, God didn't tell me, hey, dude, it's okay. Go have fun. But I did feel like everything was going to be okay after that moment. It was so strange. It was like a moment of zen. I cannot explain it. You guys can think I'm weird or crazy or whatever, but and then every 2 hours it would be like every 30 minutes, a doctor would come back in the room to check on her, and slowly, and I mean, like, her heart rate was at 140 for 4 straight days. That's the equivalent of going through, like, running a marathon for that many days in a row. She was in intensive care for over 48 hours. Then she got transferred to another room for, that was not ICU, for another 2 days. but her heart rate was that high for that long. A lot of it had to do with the medicine that she was given. She was struggling to breathe, which in itself is a physical feat. It just slowly started getting better and getting better. And they started giving her less medicine. And they were able to take the albuterol out of her nose. And they were able to take her off the oxygen machine with the pressurized oxygen. And she slowly, her lungs slowly started working again. And you don't ever realize it until it is taken away from you. You can reference a possession like your house. Imagine your house being taken away from you and how freaked out you would be, or your wife or a kid or something like that, being taken away from you. And mine wasn't. Something happened, and whether it was God or whether it was circumstance or whatever, my wife's life was saved that day. And I'm going to put it on an excellent medical staff that knew exactly what they were doing. I'm going to put it on God, and I'm going to put it on, like, another thing that I'll truly, you know, dude, you know what saved my, really saved my wife was the fact that she is obsessive about working out and staying physically fit and not being overweight and focusing on her health. And I don't know how many doctors said that if she was overweight or she was out of shape or she was morbidly obese, that she would be dead. Like, her body and the way she treats her body saved her. That was part of what saved her. And so, very, very thankful that it turned out to be okay. Right. And there's some things I kind of want to unpack here that, like, this life is so weird. We all are so concerned about certain things, and we stand on a hill. None of that shit matters when the people you love are in jeopardy of losing their life, or something takes the wrong turn instead of the right turn. My wife got to the brink and then took the right turn. She was able to come back from it. There are people in this world that don't come back from it. And the perfect example of that is while I was in the ICU, sitting next to my wife, holding her hand, watching her struggle to live, every once in a while I would have to go to the bathroom, or I would have to go get something to drink or eat or something like that. And you look around the ICU where my wife is at, and you get to see the end. And I think you guys know what I mean by that. You get to see it. You get to see, I got to watch an old person. He's probably on his last 24 hours of life. He looked old, and he was on all the machines, and they were just basically, people were going in and they were saying their goodbyes to him. The room next to my wife, there's a guy in just, I'm guessing it was a car accident or something, brace around his neck, braces on all of his arms and legs. When the doctors would go into his room, they had to put a different set of scrubs on. He did not move an inch the entire time that I was there, but he was on life support, or, I'm not sure, dude, he was hooked up like a video game. Who know? I didn't know anything about that. I'm walking out one day, and you hear all these alarms going off And I, you know, I always got freaked out because I'm looking back at my wife, making sure her machines are okay. And then I'm walking down the hall and I see a group of people performing CPR on another person. And that person was not old. Maybe they were closer to me and my wife's age, maybe mid to late 30s, if I had to guess. They didn't look like they were unhealthy. They looked slender, but they were doing CPR on that person. And it made me realize that the end doesn't have, like, it doesn't have to be when you're old. It can come anytime. Whether you want it to, or you know it, or I don't know, man. And it made me really, there has to be a silver lining on events like this, where you have to take something away. Because if you have this scenario play out in your life and then you just go back to your normal life after it, and you don't take away the fact that, hey, dude, you almost died. You get another chance to walk away. And not only that, but I still have a wife who I really do love. I bitch about my wife on this podcast and about other podcasts, you know, the joking around shit. But she is one of the most important things in my life, period. Her and my family, my kids. Without them, I'm not who I am. And you get to realize the importance of life and the importance of people. But at the same time, after going through an event like this, the panic button for me has now been moved. Oh no, we're going to, like, this thing in life is, we're going to be late. We're going to be this. We're going to be this. We can't do this. We have this. Dude, it just doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter. Like, there's so much in life that we worry about that just does not matter anymore. And like, this is a hunting podcast. I'll use crossbows for an example. I've always had my thoughts on crossbows. What the fuck does it matter at the end of the day? So many people stand on a hill and they go, like, They're Democrat, Republican, blah, 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 blah. Fuck those people. Fuck those people. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much hate towards each other. And after going through this, like, for me personally, I'm not about to talk about what my wife went through and what her takeaways were on this. But for me, dude, I so many people in this world worry about things that simply just do not matter. And I saw a meme, or like this little video online, where the guy was like, in 100 years from now, I'll just say me, my wife, my parents, my kids, they're all going to be dead. The house that I live in may not even be standing. The money that I am trying to make will no longer be a thing, right? And my great grandkids may not even know my full name. They may not even know my story, because that's how life is these days. And so to worry about all of the shit that we as Americans worry about, like, we're lucky. We don't have to worry. For the most of us, we don't have to worry about, where is our water coming from? We got to go to a sink, turn on our sink. Where's our food coming from? Oh, we got to go to a grocery store. Right? There's other people in this world that they do not have that. So we're doing pretty damn good over here. And so it was just a reminder to me, like, dude, live. To live the best life, best possible life. drop the worry and live the best possible life. Be a great human being. Treat others with respect. Live that golden rule. Do unto others which you would have done to yourself. That's a golden rule for a reason. If we treat everybody, and that shit snowballs, right? You're having a bad day. The perfect example was a couple days ago. I woke up for some reason in a grumpy mood. I was mad. I was upset with something. I woke up, something wasn't going right. And I was like, meh, 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 meh. And then my kids were acting like that. And I saw it. I saw negative energy spread. But you know what else spreads? Positive energy. And I had to be the one to change the mood in the house. So I started being a goofball and I started tickling and I started making funny faces and doing stupid dances. And that changed the entire vibe of the house. Now imagine if people you'd started doing that in your community, being more positive and energetic and appreciative and empathetic to all of those people in the world. And it just would be a better place because the positive energy spreads like wildfire, dude. I promise you this. I opened the door for a lady at the post office today when I was dropping off some full sneak shirts. And she was taken by surprise that somebody in this world would do that. I went out of my way. She was maybe 50 yards away from me. I could have easily walked by, had that door slammed shut, and she would just open it up. But I held it open for her, and she was surprised of that very small act of kindness that didn't take me anything. It just took a moment for that to happen. Something as simple as that. The other thing is, I don't know, in this world, I'm trying to be a man of faith now. I'm trying to go to church and live the good word. That's what I'm trying to do right now. But I also know that there are people in this world who do not agree with me on certain things, and I do not agree with them on certain things, whether it's their lifestyle or the way, like in certain things that they believe in. But I will tell you this. There were people of all skin colors, and I don't want to say skin color was ever a thing, but there were people of all skin colors, religious beliefs, different sexualities, different points of view. I'm sure there were ultra conservatives and all ultra Republicans or conservatives and ultra liberals, all working for one goal, and that was to save my wife's life. One of the nurses had a transgender flag on her little name badge. One was telling us, as we were sharing towards the end of her stay in the ICU and my wife could start talking again, we started having a conversation with the nurse whenever she would come in and visit, and we showed my wife showed the nurse the picture of her kids, of our kids. And she was like, oh yeah, me and my wife, she's a lesbian. Does any of that matter? Did any of that stuff matter to me? No, because they're responsible for saving my life, saving my wife's life. Those types of people. Right. And it wasn't just that one person, but it was a whole bunch of different people with a whole bunch of different points of view. And they had one common goal, and it was to make sure my wife walked out of that hospital. And so it's weird having these major events and then being able to slow down enough to absorb the little details of all of this stuff and then come home and try to, apply what you've learned in this world. And there's still things that I believe in, but there's some things in this world for me that sometimes it takes a shakeup to ask yourself, where do I stand on something like this? Do I really care enough about it? And I don't know, with what's going on in Minnesota, with me trying to find my faith, with where I stand on like what I believe is what makes a good country versus where, what does Jesus teach us versus life versus death versus love versus hate. I've been thinking a lot about all of this lately. And it's crazy because we get so worked up over the little things like crossbows and public and private land and big bucks or little bucks, or it must be nice, you know, it must be nice to do this and have this and, you know, live in Iowa or have a private ranch to hunt on or have the money to spend. You know, what's really nice is having a wife who's alive. That's nice, dude. That's what I'm thankful for. So moving forward, my goal is to keep doing what I'm doing. I have a passion for the outdoors. I have a passion for the outdoors. I have a passion for hunting. I have a passion for my family and my wife and things like that. But I think it's time that we all live our life just a little bit different. Instead of like, you watch the news, it's so poison right now. It's so poison. Like all they care about is dividing us. Nobody ever gets together anymore and says, okay, I know you feel this way and I know I feel this way. Where can we meet in the middle? Sometimes there's a middle. Maybe sometimes it's a hill that you decide to stand on and you don't want certain things to happen. But, the conversation still, I feel still has to happen. We have to talk. We have to lead with compassion and love and empathy in this world because hate and greed and jealousy doesn't get us anywhere for any reason about anything. And that's why right now we live in a world where it's almost like an every man for themselves type of world that we live in. And I don't necessarily know it has to be that way. I don't think it has to be that way. I just know that I love my wife with all my heart. I love my kids with all my heart. And I don't care about this house that I live in or the truck that I drive. And at the end of the day, dude, I don't even give a shit about deer hunting. Those four people are my personal main objective in this world. And then I get a do the fun stuff like hunt and fish and go camping and be outside and that kind of stuff. It's just, it's an eye opener to go through an event like this. And if you have ever gone through that event, but it did not turn out like what it turned out for my wife, where she was able to walk out of the hospital and you lost someone you truly love, I'm sending good vibes to you. And it would be cool to have a conversation with a hunter. I know I did a while ago, many months, I had a conversation about a guy who his dad taught him everything. His dad taught him how to hunt. All his memories were of him and his dad and hunting, and he lost his dad, I believe, to cancer. And that's not a good thing. Right. But at least he has the memories to share. And if you're going through a dark time, or don't be afraid to talk to someone about it. Cause I reached out to people. The other thing I would say is if you've been through a dark time and you're on the back end of it now, or you're coming out of it, maybe you lost a loved one, or maybe you beat cancer, or maybe you went through a period of addiction or hate, or you were in a shadow place in your life, and you see someone and you've come out of that and you see somebody else struggling with life, whether it's all the things that I've just mentioned, any one of the things that we've talked about here today, go stop what you're doing and talk to them, because it will feel good for you too, to talk a little bit about all the bad things that have happened with you. And when someone says, how do I make it through it? Maybe there's not a right answer, but you can say, this is how I made it through. This is what I did. And that will help people. So I don't know why I decided to tell that story and share that. I just have been in a place of like gratitude lately and thanks. Shout out to the hospitals that in Des Moines that my wife was at. Like, these people are professionals. They know exactly what to do. They knew exactly what to do. They knew what to do. They knew what not to do. I want to shout out our neighbors for, without even blinking, telling us, we got whatever you need. Whatever you need, you let us know and we will do it. Without even blinking. That's awesome to know that you have a neighbor. I mean, for me, that just brought us out a neighbor and closer to family with their family. I appreciated that. My mom and dad, for literally, I know they're both retired and they didn't have anything better going on, but just dropping everything and coming to our aid when we needed it. I can't tell you how many friends, my pastor, I had one of my good friends that I reached out to. We kind of have this thing where if there's anything bad that happens in our lives, we reach out and then they kind of, somebody will tell the entire group of friends that, you know, here's the bad things that have happened. So, my buddy for being there and saying, dude, I got you. What do you need? Right. And you know how awesome that is to have a group of people at your back to help you out when you need it. My wife's business, man, they gave us enough like, Uber Eats cards to last a month. So we're set for meals for a while. And just the prayers, I feel like there was a lot of prayers that went out, and I truly think that there's something to do with it. And I'll say this, like, to the good Lord, thank you for this life, man. There's nothing else to say. I also want to take this opportunity to say, you know, this isn't the big buck. This is the real life shit that happens in life. This isn't the, you know, big buck strategy. This isn't the conservation talk. This is what actually matters at the end of the day. Right. And, I feel like we put a little bit more energy into our family. That's going to give us more energy to fight what we believe in other aspects of life. And to spread love and not hate and, truth and not lies. And I don't know. And I don't know how to end this podcast. Like, I'm just so grateful and thankful for not only, this life every single day that I live, and my family, but all of you as well. Like, just taking time to listen to this podcast means a lot to me, because not only for financial reasons, but just, I still don't think that I am that guy who deserves to be in the spot that he's in. It's weird. It's a weird feeling. Even though I've done it for as long as I've done it, I just feel like I'm some dude. So, I'm just going to end it this way. Thank you. And, good vibes in, good vibes out. And we'll talk to you next week.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Eczema is unpredictable, but you can flare less with Ebglyss, a once-monthly treatment for moderate to severe eczema. After an initial 4-month or longer dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.